If you were called upon to show the importance of communication in relationships, particularly in a man and a woman trying to build a family, where would you turn? Our Bible. Genesis 11 is an excellent passage. And Genesis 11 shows that communication is vital, because what happened when they no longer communicated? They stopped building the city. When they stopped communicating, does that mean they quit talking?
No.
Talking and communicating are not necessarily the same thing. What does the word communicate imply?
Have something in common.
And so the thoughts in one person's heart, the ideas they have must be common to the other person. Doesn't mean they have to agree, but they have to understand that, or else there's no communication. I don't know of anything in family life that's more challenging, and something that you work on all your family life, that's more of a challenge and yet so vitally important than communication. We read about in the time of David, the failure to communicate didn't lead to stop building the city. It led to something else. Do you remember what it was? We talked about that in class, 2 Samuel. When David sent counselors or comforters to Hanan,
they took it wrongly.
Right, and what happened?
They shaved their head or appeared.
That's right, they humiliated them. And what was the consequence of that?
War.
That's what happens in families. War. And so, why did Hanan misinterpret the motives that David had? Counselors, poor counselors. Sometimes people listen to their friends, or they get on Facebook or somewhere else and listen to all of that instead of trying to understand their mate. And thus the result of that, we saw back in 2 Samuel 7, was war. Is communication, the importance of communication, is it illustrated in our work together as Christians in an assembly like this anywhere in the Bible?
Yes.
Yes, where?
1 Corinthians
13. 14. Right, good. And Paul said, now people could get up and speak, but there'd be no communication. Why?
Speaking different tongues.
Speaking different languages. And so the people didn't understand the language. And so he said, if you don't understand the language, you'll be like what?
Playing cymbal.
What?
Playing drum, playing cymbal.
That's good, yeah. In other words, you don't know what the meaning of the sound is. And he said you'd be like a, what kind of person?
Barbarian.
Like a barbarian. But barbarian doesn't mean with a bone in your nose and a ring in your ear. It's the idea that you don't understand the language. And as Levi pointed out, it'd be like a fella playing, if I tried to play a bugle encouraging soldiers to go to war, they may take off and run. Because if you don't sound a clear sound, people don't know what it means. And the same thing is true in the family. So communication is vital. Because it's vital, it looks like we'd be something that we would readily do. And yet there's so many things that stand in the way of communication. And that's what these verses that we've been looking at have to do with. They are mainly taken from the Proverbs, not all of them. We looked at one from Job. But they are things that you could consider barriers to us communicating. So we've been looking at that in our study. We're down to F in our lesson today. Proverbs chapter 12, 25. So if you go to Proverbs chapter 12 and verse 25. Is there ever anxiety? Talked about anxiety in a man's heart. Is there ever anxiety, worry, discomfort, concern in a husband and wife's heart that's related to the family. Sure there is. Maybe a wife is has anxiety because she thinks her husband displeased with her. I don't know if men worry about that as much as they ought to. Maybe something else. Maybe a man thinks his wife just really doesn't appreciate what he tries to do for the family. And so when a person's heart is filled with anxiety, what does the verse say happens to that person's heart?
Weighs it
down. It's a burden. It's heavy. It takes away somewhat of the joy of your life. So how can you help somebody with anxiety according to this passage?
By saying a good word.
In other words, a word that's spelled correctly and grammatically correct. Is that it?
No.
No. What do you mean by a good word?
Encouraging
word. Something. So let's think about this from a practical aspect. What are, man comes in from work in the afternoon. And so his wife's there and she's been working all day and it's time for supper. And so he sits down and eat. What might be a good word?
Appreciate you cooking dinner.
Appreciate you cooking dinner. Dinner was good. Instead of, why didn't you go to the store today like I told you to? Look, the house is not real clean. How about, man, I appreciate you cooking supper. Sure it's good. You ever tell your wives that, fellas? How often do you tell them that? Do we just take it for granted? You ever tell them, thank you for keeping the house looking nice? And ladies, you ought to do that anyway. If you don't, you ought to. Your husband ought to look forward to coming home. This wife has been working with the kids all day. And that can be a challenge, can't it, mamas? What do you say about that, fellas, when you get home? You ever tell your wife, well, I appreciate the fact you're the mother of my children and you try to care for them all day long? Do you just assume it and say, well, that's their job? Yeah, it is. You reckon they ever struggle with the issues that arise with taking care of kids all day long? I tell you what, fellas, and some of you have been in this boat, switch gears. You take care of the kids all day long. Say, when is mama coming back? So think about a good word. You know, mom struggles with decisions she makes, disciplinary issues, those kind of things. Good word can lift her heart. When's the last time you told your mate, thank you for loving me like you do? When's the last time you told your mate, thank you for trying to look attractive? Maybe a wife fixes her hair. Maybe she gets a new dress. You know, there's guys that never tell their wives, boy, your hair looks nice. Or, man, that's a new dress. They don't even realize it's a new dress. A good word can lift anxiety. And wives, turn it around. That guy comes home from work. What do you say to him? I'm glad you finally got here and you forgot to take the garbage out this morning. Or is it, sweetheart, thank you for working, take care of my family. Thank you for being loyal to us. What do you say to lift the heart? Men, as a leader, have issues that they have to struggle with. Sometimes they're not sure about the decisions they've got to make. Their heart may be filled with anxiety, and a good word can make it glad. Y'all have any other comments or suggestions on this point before we move on? I know you sit here thinking, you probably think of other applications, and that's great. That's all we're trying to do. Because it doesn't do any good to read Proverbs, read this verse, if it doesn't translate into everyday activity. Now, we've given you a checklist. What are you supposed to do with that?
Go over it with your family.
Go over it with your family. It's not for making paper airplanes. Yeah, you know, it's go home and talk to your family about it. Talk to your mate about it. And it wouldn't hurt, since we've got young people in our class, to include your children in communication. And so these are designed to try to encourage every day, Monday through Saturday, not just when we're in class here, application of the things that we're talking about. And you can add to this list. Proverbs 9:7. What kind of reaction does your mate get if they try to say something, correct something you did, or criticize something you did? What kind of reaction can they expect? Is it immediately, well, let me tell you what you did? Is it immediately a defensive thing that begins to get pretty bitter? And if that's the case, is that going to encourage them to communicate with you the feelings of their heart about things in the family that could be better? Proverbs 9:7, he who corrects a scoffer gets dishonor for himself. One of the first things a scoffer will do is say, here, let me, he's going to point the finger right back. Let me tell you about your faults. And so he gets dishonor for himself. He who reproves a wicked man gets insults for himself. And oftentimes the backlash is not even accurate. It's just a way to make self look better. That shuts the door to communication. It's not healthy. If you have your survey that we handed out, please take those, and we're going to look at those. Ashley, would you pass that down? I don't think they have a copy of that. Anyone else need this? All right. Craig, would you see who else may need this? Got a few copies left. Will you look over on page 2? Look on page 2 and look at row 2. So here's for wives, list of ways your husband might hurt you. He analyzes your words instead of trying to understand your feelings. And note the second column there. 61% said that could hurt me, make me mad or upset. Look at row 3. He doesn't pay attention to what you say, disregard your input. Look at row 5. He acts superior to you. So when the wife tries to talk about the things that's on her heart, what kind of reaction does she get? And does she get a scoffing reaction that tries to insult her, or does he listen? Turn the page to page 3, row 2. So a man tries to talk to his wife about something that's bothering him, maybe about the house or the kids or the finances or whatever it may be. What reaction? Look at row 2. She reacts emotionally to what you say instead of thinking it through logically. What do, ladies? You immediately start bawling, or do you get mad, or do you shut it off and go in the other room, close the door? What do you do? And so you'll note this one is in the second column, 29%. It's interesting that the third column, 64. So maybe this is not quite as big an issue. And remember, these are practical things that ladies have talked about. And look at page 5. Look down at the bottom. Remember, we had suggested you double letter these. So if you did that, it's going to be EE. If you didn't double letter them, it's going to be the fifth paragraph down. Comments from husbands. So, ways that wives hurt or disrespect their husbands. Wives screaming and yelling at their husbands in epidemic proportions, being insulting. I don't know why he put her in-laws, being insulted to her in-laws. But be that as it may, they're screaming and yelling. So a violent reaction. So again, you can see that. While you got it open, while you got this thing open, back up to page 4. This is on our last point about a good word. Look at right at the bottom of the page, the second paragraph from the bottom. It'll be D if you have them lettered. It said, not noticing things I've done and only criticizing me without praise. So here's comments from wives. Failure to have any, as it were, good words. Look at page 5. CC, here's the men. Look what they say. Third paragraph down, or CC, if you got it numbered. Failing to acknowledge your good attributes. Negative comparisons to other men. When she doesn't say thank you or express appreciation for his sacrifices for the family of her. Do you think men, they're different, aren't they, ladies? You ever think they don't care, do they? Whether you say thank you or acknowledge. They're not going to ask you for it, probably. But this is a survey of men. Here's what they said. And so, if you want to open the door to communication, here is a suggestion in Proverbs 12:25 and Proverbs 9:7. Okay. Look at Proverbs 12:1. It's not on your lesson. Talking about this, how you receive criticism or reproof. Whoever loves discipline loves knowledge, but he who hates reproof is stupid. That's kind of strong, isn't it? I don't like anybody criticizing me. Stupid. That's the words of wisdom. Look at chapter 27, verse 5. Good one here to remember. Better is open rebuke than love that is concealed. Faithful are the wounds of a friend, but deceitful are the kisses of an enemy. You know, people will kiss you and hug you. Oh, it's so good to see you. Then when they leave, they go tell somebody else something about you that's negative. Isn't it better to have somebody that's forthright and honest and upfront? Wouldn't you want your mate to be that way? Hug you and kiss you and then get on the phone to their friends or on the computer or their pads or phones and text. Let me tell you about my sorry husband. And then look at chapter 28, 23. He who rebukes a man will afterward find more favor than he who flatters with his tongue. So as painful as it may be, you may get insults. You may. But sometimes it still needs to be done. And if that person ever wakes up, they'll appreciate you for it. So these are just general principles, to which there are exceptions. Remember that. But they're the words of wisdom from the Proverbs. Look at Proverbs 17:9. Your next point on your lesson, H. Here we are talking about marriage. Our next lesson, we're going to talk about the purpose of the husband-wife relationship, if the Lord is willing. And who should be your best friend on this earth?
Your husband or wife.
Your husband or wife should be. Sometimes you have a husband or wife that's ungodly or obstinate. Makes it difficult, but it should be. Look at chapter 17, verse 9. He who conceals a transgression seeks love. Do you think he's talking about just condoning somebody's wrongdoing? No. Look at the next line. It'll tell you what he's talking about. He said, but he who repeats a matter separates intimate friends. He's not talking about just overlooking when people do something wrong. He's saying just to continue to harp on something. Maybe that person said, I'm sorry. Or you know they're sorry. But you continually bring it up. Continually bring it up. Next time there's an issue that they recognize they're in error about, you reckon they're going to talk to you about it? So I'm going to get beat over the head with this for 6 months. And so we got young people in our class. You know, parents make mistakes, young people. And later, sometimes they recognize, you know, I made a mistake. I'm sorry. So what do, young people? Do you say, you remember? A month later, 2 months later, you beat them over the head with that. Would you want them to do you that way? And so if you want a healthy relationship, remember this passage. Look at John 21. We're moving out of Proverbs, but it's an excellent point here about communication. John chapter 21. Verse 21 through 23. First, I just want you to tell me what Jesus actually said. What did he say? What did he say? Good grief, that's not a trick question.
What is it to thee?
Well, that's part of what he said.
If I will that he will remain till I come, what is that to you?
So he said, John will remain till I come, and that's none of your business, right?
No.
No? What did I leave out?
You follow me.
No, there's another part that I left out. Little word with two letters. And believe I had it when he said it. If. If. Oh. If. Did Jesus say he'd remain till he come? No. If. And so, that's what Jesus said. And verse 23, what was reported that Jesus said?
That the disciple would not die.
Yeah, John wouldn't die. I heard him say that in my own mouth. Really? Now, were these the men that misrepresented, these men who misrepresented Jesus? They were the Pharisees, correct? Who were they? The disciples, the brethren, just some of the ones that he had met during his preaching ministry out in the crowds. The apostles. Who could you pick out that would be closer to the Lord than these men? And they misrepresented him. Isn't that interesting? Were they ungodly? No. Did they mean to misrepresent him? I don't think so. But they did. Now, where's the failure? Why do we say that there was no communication? Why?
They're not communing on the same idea.
That's right. What Jesus said and what they thought were not common, right? What Jesus said was not common. They had something different. Jesus didn't say he's going to be around till I come. He said, if I do, it's none of your business. That's what he said.
Part of communicating is being a good listener.
That's exactly right. And I think somebody mentioned that in one of our previous classes. And that may be one of the most challenging things is learning to listen. I think years ago when I don't know if it was in an elders meeting or when I taught this class or whatever. I don't remember if it was Boyd Hurst or Rod Hines. One of these guys told me that part of their training on their job, that if somebody told them something, it was their, what they wanted them to do is repeat it back to them. Why? So you'd be sure you understand what they said to avoid this very thing we're talking about right here. Sometimes we're so ready to respond that we don't listen. Look at, on your survey, on page 2. We looked at row 3 earlier. Look at it again. She doesn't pay attention, or he doesn't pay attention. Either whether you go page 2 or page 3, it's the same thing. Doesn't pay attention to what you say and disregard your input. How many women thought that was a real hurtful issue? 49%. The second column is 47. You reckon that big enough area to maybe include your wife? And then on the next page, the first column is only 30. But what's the second column? 53. Now you're up to 80-something percent. Ladies, you reckon maybe that would include your husband? Look at Proverbs 18:13. Does this describe us instead of listening? Proverbs 18:13. He who gives answer before he hears, it's a folly and shame to him. In other words, hurry up and get through. I already got my answer. We're ready to respond before we ever understand what the problem is. Okay, so Ken's point, very good. Important part of communication is being learning to listen. And, you know, Keith got up here on a confessional Wednesday night, so I'm going to join him. That's one of my problems. So, learning to listen. That's a real challenge. Look at Ephesians chapter 4. Ephesians 4 is talking about, you can see verse 22, changing the way you live. A former manner of life that you had, you got to change. Where did they learn this manner of life?
The world.
The world. That's a good answer. Now be more specific, in the world. Where did they learn a lot of their manner of life? That's a good answer.
Parents.
What kind of parents did they have? Pagans, probably ungodly. Well, you reckon they saw in their home. And so, we talked about this in our first two lessons. People often model their family life by their culture. What if, hey, I tell you what, parents, we got some young people in the class. Would y'all be mind if I asked them if they ever saw y'all mad and stay mad at one another for a day or two or a week? Y'all don't want me to ask that, do you? You know, people get mad at one another, they won't talk to one another, or they may talk, but it's pretty obvious they're miffed. What does this verse say about anger? That it's a sin? No. What does it say?
Do not let the sun go down in your anger.
In other words, don't hold it in your heart. It opens the door to other problems. It opens the door to Satan. And so you got an anger with somebody. Maybe it's justified anger, but you need to deal with it. And so while this is talking about brethren, certainly, would it apply to the husband-wife relationship? Parent-child relationship. Young people, you get mad at your parents. Just go to bed mad, talk about it the next day at school. And parents, do you allow that to go on, or do you try to say, let's try to work through this? If you have to stay up late, miss some sleep, is it worth it? I didn't write this. You can take it, leave it, whatever, but it's counsel to guard against Satan in the efforts that he makes to ensnare us. Turn to Colossians chapter 3. Obviously, if you stay angry, it's going to shut the door to communication. On the other side of the coin, you have this admonition. As those, verse 12, as those who've been chosen of God. Holy and beloved, put on. So there's both the Ephesian and the Colossian letter. It talks about a change of thinking, a change of speech, a change of life. And so here's something new for these people. Something different from their culture, their background. Maybe what they saw grandpa and grandma and mom and daddy do. Put on a heart of, look at these things. Compassion. Kindness. Humility, gentleness, patience, bearing with one another, and forgiving each other. Whoever has a complaint against anyone. What's the greatest motivation to do that in the verse? Just as the Lord forgave you. What do you want the Lord to do? You get on your knee and you say, Lord, I made a mistake. I'm sorry. He said, I'm just too bad, buddy. I'll think about it. Maybe next week I'll forgive you. Hope you don't die. I'll stay mad at you. I don't want you coming to me in prayer. Don't talk to me. You want the Lord to treat you that way? Instead, He's full of all these things that you read. He's so compassionate, so forgiving, so kind. He's the great, majestic Lord, and yet He's humble enough to listen to our prayers. And so we get lifted up in our pride and self-importance and fail to do that. Look at 1 Corinthians 13. We're not going to talk about this in detail right now for two reasons. One, we're going to have a later lesson where we talk about love. Two, Josh is going to preach on this. He's already told me. He's going to preach in October on this. So we'll leave that for Josh to deal with then. But 1 Corinthians chapter 13, verses 4 through 7 talks about, is this I want to hug you, love? No. Is this a love that says, I'd like to slug you, but I can't. I've got to treat you different. It's not? What does long-suffering mean? Or patient? I'd like to slug you. You sure mistreated me, but I'm gonna hold off. Yeah, there's times people mistreat you. What you'd like to do is say, get out of the room. I don't even want to see your face. Love is patient. Love is kind. This is what I like it. Caring love. It cares about people. It's not emotional. It's the opposite. In fact, it has to overcome emotions. The other kind of love is great. That is affectionate love. We'll talk about that in another lesson. Affectionate love is wonderful. But this is a higher kind of love. And affectionate love, you can't command it, far as I know. You can't affect it. We'll talk about that. This love is commanded. I believe it was Sam was telling me about the other night, and I've heard this. Many of you have heard it. And, God says, look, you don't understand my wife. I have a hard time treating this way. Well, guy, preacher's asking, Sam said, well, it's... What is she, you consider your enemy? She sure is. So he said, well, the Bible said, love your enemy. And this applies, doesn't it? Love your enemy. So it doesn't make any difference whether they're good and sweet and kind and all that. These are the things, and you can read down through here. And you know what I've encouraged people to do? Maybe it would work for you, I don't know. If people are having difficulty in their marriage, say like an affectionate love, I just don't like them anymore, or they don't like me. Take these verses 4 through 7, print them out, write them down, whatever. Put them on the refrigerator. Or if you're a guy and you go to work, put them in your lunchbox. Read them at least once a day. Say, today I'm going to treat my mate that way. And just see what happens in a week or a month. May not take a month to your relationship. Today I'm going to try to treat my mate this way. It may be they'll fall in love with you again. But anyway, it's a suggestion. Now, here we've been talking about communication. There's all kind of excuses why people don't communicate. Folks, somebody says, I just don't care about that. I'm not interested in that. What does that indicate? Not loving them, not concerned about the other person's anxiety and problems. It betrays ignorance. You don't realize how important this is to your relationship. It's a foolish pride, isn't it? Suppose somebody said, well, look, it's not my problem. It's their problem. Are you one with your mate? If they have a problem, do you have a problem? Yes, indeed, you do. One person said, look, I just don't have anything to correct. We talked about that in one of the Proverbs, didn't we? You know, the fool, you can't talk to him because everything's right in his own eyes. Conceit. Now, this is one that's really an excuse that really could be discouraging to participating in communication, but it's just too difficult, too hard. I've told you from the outset of this study, I think it's one of the most difficult things in marriage. But the question is it worth it? You say, I've tried, and I failed. Join the club. Who hasn't? But is it worth trying again? I just get mad. Now who's got a problem? I say, well, I just don't like to communicate. I don't like it, and I'm not going to do it. Who says that? What kind of person? Says, I don't like to go to work, and I'm not going. I don't like to brush my teeth, and I'm not brushing them. I don't like to take a bath, and I'm not taking one. Who does that? Children, immature. So I don't like it, so I'm not going to do it? What? Look, I just can't. I can't stop my habits. I can't help it. Is that a good excuse? You ever heard anybody say that about drinking? You ever heard anybody say that about drugs? You ever heard anybody say that about anger issues? Why, that would justify anything, won't it? I can't. Yes, you can. Now look, God doesn't tell us to do anything we can't do. All right, so we're going to encourage you now to take your, not now, but when you get home, to look over this sheet and discuss it with your family. When you get to some of them, like number 8, don't just answer it in the quietness of your room. Talk to your mate or talk to your mom and dad or talk to your children about it. Do you ever say, I was wrong, please forgive me? You ever say that? Children, do I ever say that? Sweetheart, do I ever say that? Just go down through the list and talk about it. Number 10, you ever communicate praise, thanksgiving, etc. All right, so we encourage you to do that. Lord willing, in our next class, we'll begin with Lesson 4, the purpose of the husband-wife relationship. A lesson with tremendous implications for the choices you make every day in your family. The Lord willing, Wednesday night, we'll pick up with Lesson 4. Thank you for your comments and attention this morning.